Coming up on Life is a Festival.
What makes Aniwa what it is the type of elders that have joined this movement. No, there are some indeed very, very magical people. One quality they all share, first of all, is their humility. You know, it's a lifetime of deep, deep, deep study, a lot of sacrifices, a lot of hardships to sustain this wisdom within their culture that they had to go through. And all of them are always smiling. All of them joke around. All of them have such a present inner child, the purity. Sometimes you look at them, they look like a little child. Smile, cheeky smile, joke, making jokes. And other times they look like they are thousands of years old. And so all of them have this same lightness of spirit, of not taking things too personally, of knowing how to just stop and observe.
My name is Eamon Armstrong, and this is Life is a Festival. This podcast is a celebration of thinkers and leaders who live their lives with the open-hearted, experimental joy of a festival. Each week, we converse in complete openness, in an ongoing quest to find those boundaries in our being and melt them into lofty horizons. Life is a festival, only to the wise. Damn, it feels good to be a podcaster. Are you as old as me where you know what that is in reference to? You know, like Office Space back, you know, damn it. No? Yes, maybe? Oh gosh, are we starting on the right foot today or no? Look, I just want to share that I really like being a podcaster. I love the conversations I get to have. And something that I've noticed is that they tend to cluster. Like there's a couple episodes about psychedelics or there's a couple episodes about festival culture or whatever. So today we're doing another around the theme of plant medicine, which has been present of late, but we're about to jump into a theme of sexuality and gender, which is super exciting because actually tomorrow I am going to an ISTA retreat. That's the International School of Templar Arts, which is a neo-tantric workshop. And you best believe I will be podcasting about it. Now that will probably come out in a couple weeks, so just keep your eye out for that. But that is not what we're doing today. Today, we are talking about a superhero team of indigenous elders. Okay, so I just love this whole concept of these like mystical powered ancient beings from all around the globe who are coming together to help heal humanity. It's crazy, it's mythical, it's gorgeous, and we're gonna talk about it today. So what we're talking about is something called Aniwa. Aniwa hosts the Aniwa Gathering, as well as a platform for ancestral wisdom. Now the Aniwa Gathering first happened in Ibiza in 2017, and I was actually there, turns out. So it's such a nice full circle thing to connect with Vivian and Rudy today on the show. So today on the show, we're talking to Vivian Villela and Rudy Ronda, who are the co-founders of both Aniwa and the BOA Foundation, a nonprofit. So we're talking about both the Aniwa Gathering, how it came to be, but also this collection of indigenous elders. And these are people like Benki Piako, Mona Palaka, and the mysterious Mamos of the Sierra Nevadas. And what they've done is in this pandemic world where we really need more access to this leadership and wisdom, they've created a platform. So Aniwa, which was a gathering, has turned into a digital platform where you, yes, you, if you're so inclined, can actually go online and take courses from indigenous elders. Pretty cool. So on the show, we're going to talk about the Rainbow Prophecy and how that gave birth to the Aniwa Gathering, that whole legacy. And then we'll get into some of the more complex issues around how do we really transmit elder knowledge to a Western context? And how could we scale indigenous wisdom in this modern world? And what are the pitfalls of that? The work that Aniwa is doing, and especially the work that these elders are doing in the world, is so important and so worth learning about, so I'm excited to share with you today. Anuwa is a movement, and the mission is to amplify the voices of the world's most respected Indigenous leaders and to help remember how to connect with the power of the elements, the memories of the trees, the teachings of the heart. Anuwa curates transformative experiences through ancient ceremonies, ancestral wisdom, cultural exchange, and reciprocity, creating a deeper sense of connection and all-inclusive solutions to live a joyful life of peace, understanding, and healing. The Anuwa Gathering is a nonprofit event produced by the BOA Foundation, bringing together 40 of the world's most respected Indigenous leaders and elders to share their wisdom over 4 days of cultural exchange and sacred ceremonies. So now, without further ado, here are co-founders of both Anuwa and the BOA Foundation, Vivian Villela and Rudy Ronda. Vivian, Rudy, welcome to Life is a Festival. It's such an honor to have you both on this show today. And we've been wanting to have this conversation for a while. It's been a couple of months since we first concocted this particular chat that we're planning to have today. And there's so much to talk about. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show. I'm so excited about what Anuwa is doing, what Anuwa has done, and just honored to have the opportunity to share your work with our listeners today. So welcome to the show.
It's an honor to be here also.
Well, why don't we start just to locate the audience a little bit with the work that both of you do and how you came to creating the Anuwa Gathering and now the School of Ancestral Wisdom, which will be available for people around the world to connect with Indigenous leadership. Vivian, how did you come to this work?
When I was little, first of all, it was when this window through the great mystery was open for me. One time I bought a magic book and I started doing the spells and every single one of them worked. And I got really, really freaked out when I started to see my past lives in the mirror. And so I never wanted to see those things again because obviously my parents didn't support me. My parents weren't in, my father used to say God didn't exist. Otherwise, a scientist would already know about it. He was an extremely intelligent man, read a lot of books, and it was very science-based. My mom, I grew up Catholic, but my mom didn't really practice anything until later when she married the son of a preacher. And so that was my beginning into the spiritual world as a child. And then later, as a teenager, I also had very scary experiences in a haunted house. And so I prayed, I never want to see spirits again, please. And it wasn't later until I was very successful financially in my job. I was a model for many years. And then I was starting to work as an actress. And I started to feel deeply unfulfilled and feel like I was looking to fill in a gap with a lot of external things. It was consumerism, it was meaningless relationships, partying, just a lot of ways that I thought I was connecting, which were leading to further disconnection. Food, you know. I met a healer that in Brazil that connected me with the most beautiful energies and said to me, you know, my guides were giving me an ultimatum. They were like, either you change your lifestyle completely or we're not going to help you. It was more or less like that. And I'm like, come on, how can they say that? No? And he was like, go home. Don't eat meat. Don't go partying. Don't drink alcohol, anything for 3 days. And then you come back here and you let me know what you decided. And so on the second day, I wake up in the middle of the night and there's this light coming from the ceiling directly into my heart. And it was the most powerful, beautiful thing I've ever felt. And so from that day, I knew this was a calling and I knew it was time to make really big changes in my life. And so I went for it, even though I didn't know how. You know, my life was very different at the time. And all of my friends were party friends. We loved to go to raves on the weekends and connect to nature. All of these things were also a calling for me through community, because we used to hang out so many people every weekend. We would drive to the most beautiful nature places to go camping, to go bathe in waterfalls, and listen to music and dance all night, but also be in community, which is something that I never had as a child. And so I felt that this whole raving scene really awoke in me values. This was my search for those values, for true community, to connect with people that were being spontaneous, that were being genuine at that time, even if they were under the influence of different things. At that time, they were being spontaneous, they were being genuine, they were connecting on a deeper level. And we were connecting with nature in the way that we knew how to. And so after this experience, all doors start opening for me. He, you know, removed a lot of different energies that were in me, which I didn't even have any awareness about. And when that happened, doors start opening and different teachers started to appear in my life and nature experiences. And so this is when a window opened for me to once again be able to feel nature, to connect with everything that is alive on a deeper way and allow nature to guide me.
You know, I think a lot of people listening to this show will share that experience, that raving was kind of a portal to deeper connection. This experience of going out in nature with people, taking drugs because those drugs allowed a connection that wasn't available otherwise, but then wanting to look a little deeper and wanting to clear out some of the things that kind of blocked their experiences of joy and connection. I think a lot of us have been on that path, are on that path to a certain degree. Rudy, was it similar for you? Did you start out raving?
Not raving. I was a hippie. And reggae and conscious hip hop, but overtones of the same story. You know, grew up, my parents did not shelter me. They would take me to once a month to make sandwiches for a homeless shelter. We're involved in like urban communities. And so I saw a lot of inequality and injustice, which I really couldn't properly navigate the feelings as a young empath. You know, I started to drink and party early as a way of kind of escaping these feelings. And my solace was going to these concerts, whether it was like a Grateful Dead type jam band or reggae or hip hop, also out in nature. And that's where I would feel good and I'd feel at peace and I'd feel community. I had a sort of really aha moment when I had been caught with marijuana and my parents were really worried and they sent me on an outward bound journey, which is, it was like a 6 or 7 week course out in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina and Tennessee, where you're just with your group of 8 people, whitewater rafting, camping, no tents, just tarps, mountain climbing, rappelling. And then they put you on a solo. They put you by yourself for 3 nights and 3 days with near a water source. And then with one food item, I had a little bag of peanut butter. And for those 3 days, you're by yourself. And, you know, this experience touched me so much. But unfortunately, by the time I got to college, the social pressures of fitting in, drinking and stuff, I changed away from that. And then I was in corporate America. And it wasn't until my 30s, when I turned 30, when I started to return back to this 15, 16, 17-year-old self that really cared about nature and service. And I had a friend, luckily, a very close friend, who was paralyzed after the Afghanistan invasion in 2001 from the chest down. And he had been seeking all different methods in order for him to walk again, one of which was plant medicine. And, you know, he called me and he's like, "You got to come on one of these trips, my spiritual trips. It's time." As I was just shedding all these different aspects of my egoic, safe personality in 2012, quitting my job, breaking up with the girlfriend, separating from a large group of party friends, and starting to seek there must be something more because I'm just feeling emptier and emptier with my success and with the comfort that I'm gaining materially in this world. And he was right. I joined him on this retreat in Colombia for 10 days and everything changed after that.
You know, I myself actually went on one of those programs when I was a young man. I was
really?
An at-risk. Yeah, I was an at-risk youth, is what they called us. And I went to SUSE, which is the School of Urban and Wilderness Survival. Outward Bound can be punitive, but there's a lot of people who go for fun. This one was like strictly for kids who were in trouble and didn't want to be there. It was similar of being connected to nature. That solo experience that you talked about, I remember that well, of having a little camp by a lake. Same thing, like tarps, no tents, and just being there and just being with myself. And it's interesting, the experience of simply being with yourself. It's increasingly difficult in this modern world because everything is here to distract you and to give you what you want. And even if you are alone, you always have your phone in this modern world. And for me, I remember, you know, being about 17 at the time and just being totally by myself and how powerful it was to be okay in that space. It was the first time in my life I was like, oh, I'm actually okay. So I really resonate with that. And of course, this kind of coming back to plant medicine and the teachings there too. So yeah, I resonate with both of your experiences.
That's amazing. I have to say it was punitive for the four young men in our group and for the four young women. They were there as a reward. So it was like, guys were being punished. The girls had done well in school and their parents had given them this gift. I faked it was a punishment though. I was like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And secretly I was like, this sounds like the best summer ever.
So let's talk about Aniwa. I actually first encountered Aniwa in Ibiza in 2017, I believe. And it was a gathering of indigenous wisdom. And for me, as a festival entrepreneur and connoisseur in that time in my life, I was like, oh, this is a festival of plant medicine. Like, I want to come and see. And what I was anticipating, as I said, was a festival of plant medicine, a festival of sort of the groovy psychedelic experiences that are part of that journey. But what I experienced instead, what I encountered instead, was much more about eldership and the wisdom of these incredible indigenous leaders. I remember a Maori gentleman who just had the most beautiful laugh and the most wonderful tattoos. Also an Iroquois elder who spoke about masculinity and about the need to grieve and the need to feel. For me, just being around those leaders had itself just a kind of medicine and a kind of continuity with life that I didn't experience in my various adventures at festivals and that sort of thing. So I'd love to talk a bit about the Aniwa gathering and sort of how Aniwa came to shape and a little bit about Aniwa itself.
So Aniwa came to being, it was almost, Aniwa has its own spirit and it was never prayed for in this way. It was never planned. It just came to being, really. It was a really beautiful how all doors open. And Aniwa, with its own spirits, it started bringing the elders and the right people, the right person, that out of a conversation, asking for advice to do an event for himself, this idea came out of nowhere. I was like, hey, why don't you do this? And he goes like, oh, and, you know, I started talking to him about this in that moment with so much passion. And this man said, okay, let's do this event together. And later, a few months into the planning, he's, you know what, this has nothing to do with what I do. I'll give you guys the money for your foundation and you do it yourselves, you know. And so it was truly a blessing. And so the gathering is based on the Rainbow Prophecy, which is a prophecy that was spoken about for the first time in the media in 85. It's from many different indigenous groups from the north. The Cree spoke about it. A few different communities from Canada also. I know there are many, many groups that see it in a different way, this prophecy, but basically the main saying is there would come a day when all the rivers would be dying, the oceans would be empty of fish, the forests would be burning, all the people would be fighting, and then the eighth fire would be lit. People would come together from all colors, creeds, and races, and they would look at the elders for guidance. And so they would move around the world as a great swirling rainbow, bringing peace, understanding, and healing everywhere they went. So this is a time of prophecy. Many cultures have different prophecies saying the same thing, that this would be a time that would be very difficult, that would be like a breakdown to breakthrough. However, it would be a new time for deep awakening and deep connection between all peoples and nature. So this is what Aniwa is based on. The foundation of the gathering is to provide a platform for people to come together and learn from the elders. And why didn't we want to put plant medicine there? I mean, we do have tobacco, cacao, and tobacco snuff, the rapé. But why didn't we want to do entheogen medicines? Because we observed that in today's world, so many people came in contact with these plants and they are relying on them to do the spiritual practice. And so these plants are a powerful portal into the spirit world. But if we do too much of them and don't integrate them, our spirits stay up there. Some elders say many people lose their spirits. They stay up there flying, and later this can cause problems in one's life. So it's really the most important thing is for us to learn our connection with the elements, how to do ceremony without depending on an external substance or sacred plant, but how to do that every day in our lives, to be able to honor the water, the air, the earth, the fire, to be able to look up to the sun and bless ourselves with his rays, and to feel fulfilled and complete like that, remembering our intrinsic connection with these elements that we are all made of.
Rudy, how about you? How did you get involved in Aniwa? How did you get connected to this community?
Well, I got connected because after this experience I had in Colombia, where I woke up, as I say, and began my awakening process and healing process, I shifted my career. I wanted to do something that would help. I wanted to do something that would amplify the message of these indigenous people. And I started writing a book based on who I was as this sort of corporate party animal in some way. And then what led me to medicine, and then what I saw in this and how different the values that I saw just in this 10 days, the values that were transmitted were so different than how I had been programmed. And I was also working in sort of a holistic startup, doing some marketing, and I got hit by a car and concussed. And I couldn't do anything for 9 months, much more than sleep and meditate. And it was at this juncture then that I started to pray every night by the fire and make offerings of tobacco by the fire. And asked for guidance. And it said, what came through was you need to start an NGO, which is based upon alliances with indigenous leaders. And then you need to make content around these indigenous ways. And, you know, I prayed like this for many, many months and said you'd meet your partner in this in Brazil. And I thought that was weird because I'd never been to Brazil. And I didn't speak Portuguese, and I was much more connected to the natives of Turtle Island. I already had relations with Lakota and Apache. But I went to Brazil, and I met Vivian there. She asked me what I did, and I told her what I did, but then I told her what I wanted to do, which is what I just explained here. And she said, that's my dream too. And I said, okay, well, I want to make a film using that guy, Ninowa. She says, I've been talking to him. That's his dream. He wants people to come make a film on his culture. And so here are these two strangers. She had been cultivating this prayer in London without knowing each other. And none of our immediate friends wanted to go on this adventure. And I'd been cultivating this prayer. I'm trying to bug my friends. They said, oh, well, after our startup's launched and this, then we'll do this. And here we were brought together by the medicine, Vivian and I and Ninowa. And literally within 3 months, we had fundraised for a well in this man, Ninowa Paidamata's village, because they didn't have clean water. And we were in his village filming. And so that's where this all started, is we started there first with the charitable aspect and launched the Boa Foundation. And as we continued to work together and helped more villages, then that's how Aniwa developed. And, you know, it was Vivian's initial inspiration to have a big gathering like this. And then, of course, I thought it was an amazing idea. So we just went for it. And to add one thing about the Aniwa gathering and the Rainbow Warrior prophecy, we see now how much division is being conditioned in our society. There's a million ways we're being taught to look at each other and how we're different. And this is what really inspired me, is because unity is the most, to me, imperative thing that is necessary in order to create this new future of harmony, peace, harmony, love, and compassion. And it's not easy. And so with these indigenous elders setting the tone by helping us to remember our own connection to the elements, our own connection to our own ancestors, our own connection to the spiritual world, they're really guiding us to unity, because this is what they stand for. This is what they embody. So this was just our small way of contributing to this prophecy, because again, thought long about prophecy. What is prophecy? How does prophecy manifest? Prophecy is just a story, unless there are good hearts that feel the call to join this prophecy and actually act. And this is what we're seeing in a very small way that we hope to continue to expand through our online offerings, through all our different events, through all the different alliances that we've been making. But it started just with this gathering as just a small piece to bring people together in unity. And we were a bit naive, because we thought, oh, we're just going to have all these elders here and we're going to be singing and around the fire and everyone's going to be dancing and it's just going to be amazing. But because of the amount of light, and it's so beautiful that you were there, by the way, the amount of light that was channeled to this one spot with all these indigenous elders, all their guides, all their ancestors, and then all these good hearts that showed up, it was blinding. And so it was like a medicine experience in itself, because there was no place for the shadow to hide. And then because of that, things were coming up and there was so much division that I had the opportunity to really throw the gathering off. And it was beautiful because, again, with the steady hand of the elders, they helped us navigate. Two people, Vivian and I, who had never thrown a large-scale event like this, our backgrounds and skill sets were in something completely different. And with the elder's steady hand, we were able to see this through, and the result was a very successful event. And I look at this as a microcosm of the world. It's not going to be easy, but we need the steady hand of our elders, whose knowledge is coming, it's millennial. You know, this isn't something that they've made up or just read in a book. This has been passed down to them orally for generations. And if we look to them and respect them as such, and then follow the path that they're setting, there is no limit to what we can accomplish as humanity on this earth. And I just wanted to add that little piece there about the Aniwa gathering.
Thank you for adding that. These elders, I mean, they're like a collection of superheroes. Their presentations are all so rich from their cultural traditions. It's like these collection of these superpowers and these larger-than-life beings that are all coming together from all these different corners of the world, quite majestically. And I wonder if we could speak for a little bit about some of the elders themselves that you've encountered in your travels. And maybe you could share a few of the elders that you've worked with and maybe some of the teachings that have been most potent that you've connected with from them.
What makes Aniwa what it is the type of elders that have join this movement. No, there are some indeed very, very magical people. One quality they all share, first of all, is their humility. You know, it's a lifetime of deep, deep, deep study, a lot of sacrifices, a lot of hardships to sustain this wisdom within their culture that they had to go through. And all of them are always smiling. All of them joke around. All of them have such a present inner child. The purity. Sometimes you look at them, they look like a little child. Smile, cheek a smile, joke, making jokes. And other times they look like they are thousands of years old. And so all of them have this same lightness of spirit, of not taking things too personally, of knowing how to just stop and observe. And so the Amazonian, the Ashaninka leader that we work with, he and his brother, he's called Benki Pianko. And he, in his culture, is considered a prophet, a direct messenger of God. They call them Antaviari, the Ashaninka. And so when a child like that is going to be born, the entire community in both Brazil and Peru are notified that a new Antaviari is coming. And so he comes here to do the work of God. And so he's been called the Dalai Lama of the rainforest. And he planted over 2 million trees. He's only 45 years old. And he's building a reforestation center in the Amazon now. He has healed many people from around his community, from drug addiction, alcohol addiction, and very serious diseases also, teaching them to work with the land. And so within his teachings, he works with sacred medicine, with the sacred medicine of ayahuasca. But within his teachings, he can say, we cannot just pray. We need to plant trees. This is our future. So we diet with him in the Amazon for 3 months, a year. And for me, one of the most powerful teachings I received was in the first diet, he says, first, to be a healer, you need to remove all anger from your heart. And this is why you come here and you do this. You sleep very little. You eat a little fish, tiny little fish a day. And then you do ceremonies every single night for 90 days. So you were up sometimes until 4 in the morning, and you have to be up at 6, have a cold shower. And so there are many different plants that cleanse our physical bodies, our minds, our spirits. Another thing I heard from Mona Polaca, who is a water protector, and she has written many books, and she has worked to defend indigenous rights for many years. She says, she learned this from her teacher, said, don't put me in a pedestal, because when I walk out of here, the first step I take may be the one in which I will fall. So that to me also really marked my heart to hear this from such a powerful, beautiful leader.
Who is Mona Polaca?
So Mona Polaca is a Hopi Tewa Havasupai elder. She is an author in the field of social science, and she is one of the 13 indigenous grandmothers from the Indigenous Grandmothers Council. And she also served on many committees for indigenous peoples in the UN. She has been working to further social justice for indigenous peoples since an early age. She's really incredible, incredible wise grandmother. Yeah, the majority of them, they never talk about themselves. They talk about the spiritual world. They talk about ideas. They talk about divine connection, prayer. And they talk about unity, but they embody unity in a way that is more than just speaking. So when we listen to leaders that are embodied in this way, we're not just hearing words. We are receiving an energetic transmission. And that is the teaching. No, that's why so many people say, oh my God, I went to Aniwa gathering. I had a life change. I didn't take any medicine, because this is the transmission that teaches us to be our own medicine. No, that teaches us, and the prayer and these words from the elders, they're the umbilical cord that connect, that sustains us and that connects us to the earth, that provide that channel so that we can receive the direct guidance and the direct healing from the earth. So they are, their words and their teachings are portals which provide this connection. And so we have elders, for instance, the Mayans, they smoke a tobacco. And as the tobacco burns, they are reading the leaves and they are telling you everything that is happening in the situation you asked about or in the healing you're receiving. The leaves are burning and telling them. It's really incredible. I want to honor here the memory of Tata Pedro, that did so much beautiful work all around the world. He was one of the last great Mayans with his level of wisdom. He just passed away, and we have been supporting a book he's writing about Mayan wisdom with a group of elders from Guatemala. And so we raised some funds when he was sick, and these funds are going to be used to finish this book also. So thank you to our community who donated for that. And Rudy can speak about some other amazing relations we have.
It's so funny, Vivian. It's like we're always on the same page. I was going to say something of Benki and something of Mona Palaka. What I will say, though, in general, is these leaders are superheroes. It's really a truth. And they're human. And so they don't stand for people to deify them because they're aware they're human. But they're also aware that they have this extraordinary connection that they've cultivated, or in some cases, like Benki, were born with it. And to feel that humanness, I feel, is one of the most important aspects of their leadership. Because this is another potential pitfall on the road to being a spiritual leader. There's the money, the power, the sex aspect. But then there's this aspect of believing the deification that's being thrust upon you by a society that has a tendency to deify those that they look up to. And this is, of course, runs parallel to our popular culture. You have celebrities that we turn into gods and politicians. And so I really appreciate about these elders, these leaders, is because they embrace their humanness and they don't believe their own hype. And for me, as Vivian was mentioning, just one thing that I gleaned from Benki, being out there as actually his first Western students in this school, Ashaninka School of Healing, where we drink medicine every night, he drills into our head, there's no competition. The moment you start competing, you're losing. And then, you know, our first leader that we ever worked with, Wa Paidamata, this man is just so happy. And he even has a mantra, it's So Alegria, which in Portuguese means only joy. We've had people who've tried to confront him about this mantra that he's often spouting during ceremony and anytime you're around him. So Alegria, that's a spiritual bypass. You can't just go to the joy. But they're misinterpreting what he's saying. He's reminding you that there is only joy. So if we are in a difficult moment, if we're in a moment of sadness, someone close to us passes, it's good to feel all the sadness and all the feels that go along with a difficult moment or a loss. But then it's, again, our Western human propensity to just wallow in the sorrow. And what he's saying is, feel the feels. That's okay. But then remember the joy. Remember all the good things that we had with Tata Pedro. Instead of being sad that he's not here when he was in good health, he should be here another 20 years. The world needs him. Instead of wallowing in this loss, let's remember all the joy that Tata Pedro brought us. His infinite childlike nature, his humility. And okay, if we're in a process like in medicine, and we're seeing some ugly aspects of ourselves and we're like, oh, I'm such a bad person. Again, let's not wallow in that. Let's accept it. And then look around, you know, we're in a circle of all divine beings, also humans. And there's beautiful music and prayers being played. So it's like the opportunity to invite joy into our life at any moment, not to bypass anything.
I think a really powerful teaching from the mamas from the Sierra Nevada. Some of them are in a dark cave for the first 20 years of their lives without seeing daylight. Just as a child, they come out at night and they're being trained to be able to listen to nature. And they say the Sierra Nevada is the heart of the world and it has energetic connections to every sacred place around the world. And they are in charge of maintaining balance on earth. And so the mamos, they're also like the antaviaris designated by the universe. When a child is going to be a mammal, they receive a notification. Other mammals will receive a notification before they are born. And the way they teach us is saying that we have, everything is an exchange. So we can't just take from the earth. We also need to give back. And we give back through pagamentos in their culture, sacred offerings. And the majority of the materials for pagamentos are in our thoughts. And so they do work cleansing. For instance, when they talk about the fire is our sacred grandfather fire that has all the wisdom of the universe. And the polarity of it, the contamination, is related to weapons, violence, bombs. And so they cleanse these elements and thinking about all of the violence first in our own lives, and then thinking about all of the violence around the world and putting in little pieces of cotton. So we did that with them through the water, the wind, the earth, thinking about all of these qualities and the contamination of all of the waters around the world and also in our internal waters, contamination of our sacred waters through sexuality, and then the air, the fracking, the violation of the earth, which leads to people being violated in this way. We're raping the earth and there is corruption in the sexual energy. And all of these, and then think about how much money did we ever spend on water in our lives? Put that in the cotton. How much money has the world ever spent on water? Imagine that and put that in the cotton. And so they teach us that through these thoughts, we need to be, first of all, our thoughts are influencing the air because it's the air that moves our thoughts, our words. And so whenever we have negative thoughts, we need to pay for them. And so they gave me an exercise that every 2 weeks, I need to make a pagamento thinking about every bad thought that I had, put them in the cotton and pay for them. And so is this idea, and they say, if we don't do this, nature gets sick and more people get sick. And this is the way they work. But there are many other cultures that are totally based on this sacred exchange with this spiritual world. And so we take, we give back, and through our prayers, we nourish the earth. Through our prayers, we can cleanse the water and we can create harmony. And so it's the responsibility for each one of us as human beings to take responsibility for everything we say, for everything we think, for everything we do, because every thought we have, we're obviously connected through a web of light to every living being on this planet. So every negative thought we have affects this web of light. Every negative thought we have influences the collective consciousness. And so whenever we do healing work, the same, we also heal patterns that are stored in this collective consciousness. So it's a really beautiful way to live. You know, the mamas say, when you're drinking a glass of water, drink for all the people that don't have clean water to drink. Send them this energy. When you're cleaning your house, sweeping the floor, sweep the corruption from your country. Sweep things you no longer need from your life. And so it's a way to always live in prayer. When you're cooking, take each different food and put, okay, this one is love. This one is harmony. This one is the spirit. You know, mix for your family all of the qualities that you want in your home. And so like this, when we are living in prayer, there is very little space for negativity to come in because we are constantly connected to that umbilical cord. We are constantly reminded in everything we do from the aliveness of this element, from the aliveness of this consciousness that we are a part of, that we are a manifestation of.
I love that practice, and that's a practice that anyone can do. And it reminds me a lot of certain kind of Buddhist practices as well, of like Tonglen, of like breathing in other people's suffering and breathing out the calm and ease to them. So it's, to me, it aligns a lot with these Buddhist practices as well. So Rudy, you touched on spiritual bypassing as you were just discussing that this mantra of joy was not about spiritual bypassing, but it was in fact about feeling, moving through feelings and then coming to joy. And I think that this is kind of an instructive distinction here because a lot of elders are holding wisdom that has come through a lot of their lives and through their embodiment and through how they exist in the world. Sometimes this wisdom can trickle down into sort of pithy cliches, or even worse, it can be the kind of thing that people can misunderstand and can get wrapped into their own magical thinking or their own sort of egoic relationship to the spiritual journey. And this is something that I'm seeing a lot in the world right now, is that where a lot of young people, or people of any age really, but people who are neophytes into this world of plant medicine especially, which is so popular at the moment, but following these indigenous traditions, a lot of times people can get caught in their own stories, caught in their own self-aggrandizement in the context of healing journeys. I know for myself personally, I've, in my exploration of plant medicine, as I was first exploring this, feeling like I'm somehow particularly special and important, and that a lot of the wisdom would be then filtered through my own self-understanding, which at that time and still to this day is obviously limited. So my question is, how in your stewardship of indigenous leadership, how are you monitoring the way that the culture is receiving this wisdom? How do you assist this wisdom in being transmuted in ways that people can be in integrity to it? Because we are in a different context in the West than in the jungle, than in Gabon, than in some of these places where these traditions are embedded in their culture. We're not embedded in that culture. We're going back to our Instagram and fast food that's all around us. So how do you support this wisdom in a way that it maintains its integrity and allows people to walk with humility and grace and growth?
This is a great question. Thank you. First, I want to start off, though, by saying that if you are drinking ayahuasca, you are special. We are all special, but this is a particular gift for each and every person because this is a finite resource on Earth. And it's not the same if ayahuasca starts to get grown in a factory. So to have this opportunity to connect to the divine and to receive messages is a responsibility. And each person that drinks this medicine is now being tasked to steward whatever transmission they received in a good way. That is the responsibility of every person, whether it's your first time or you've drank hundreds of times. And what happens is exactly what you were asking about. People co-opt the message because oftentimes they don't have the elder then that stays present with them to help them understand this message and how to bring it forth in the world. They don't properly integrate the message. They hear the words, feel the sentiment, but then they don't actually integrate it within themselves. And as all our elders say, you want to change the world, you need to change yourself first. You want to help one other person, you need to help yourself first. Vivian and I consider ourselves bridges. That's when we started Aniwa all these years ago. Our first tagline was building bridges. And a bridge flows both ways, right? It's not a one-way bridge. And as a bridge and a steward of this information, we see many people who co-opt these messages for their own personal gain. We see people who are only about the love and the light. Love and light, love and light. But you can't ignore the shadow. The shadow is equally sacred. And the shadow is, in fact, really our greatest teacher, one of them. And for me, oftentimes I've been communicating what's coming through the elders and sharing this on a platform like Facebook or in a talk. And some people say, well, my experience is different. Like, who are you, the police of indigenous wisdom? And that's not it at all. It's that this wisdom isn't for us to co-opt and to change to fit our own narrative. Wisdom stands as itself. And we need to just listen, which is, again, why we didn't have plant medicine at our Aniwa gathering, because we wanted people just to listen, hear the message. And the best way that we found, the best strategy, is to amplify the voices of these indigenous leaders. Because then it isn't Rudy or Vivian who's saying this. It's coming straight from an unbroken chain of wisdom. And this is why we have our Aniwa gathering. This is why we have our Aniwa events, whether they're long-form retreats in various villages or indigenous communities. This is why we have our tours where we bring them to the United States or Europe or other places. And this is why, of course, we have our online educational platform. Because the more people that can hear this wisdom and then have an opportunity to perhaps interact, ask questions with these leaders, the more people that can join this school of ancestral wisdom in its various different cultures, the more people then understand the true meaning of this wisdom, because it's easy to talk. I say this about myself. It's easy to receive wisdom and then go around and parrot it, but it needs to be embodied for it to be properly transmitted. These indigenous leaders are embodied. So there's a greater depth, more profound breath of transmission coming from an embodied elder.
May I add something? I think it's not about being Western or being indigenous. I think it's about, first of all, learning things in a good way, you know, because if we're going to share a wisdom that is millenary and so many people had to even lose their lives to maintain this wisdom alive, it's not something that we learn overnight. It's not something we embody overnight. It's also through many, many sacrifices, through these initiations. And the elders that come from the cultures where this wisdom is from will guide each person, each student. And these people, they're doctors, even the ones that don't serve plant medicines, but the ones that just work with healing, spiritual leaders, is the same as being a doctor. And no one can go to the school and get a doctor's diploma in a month or even in a year. It takes many, many years. It takes many, many hours of classes, of practices. And I feel if I'm eating vegan and I'm judging the other person who is eating meat, if I'm taking the bicycle to go to work and I'm judging the person that is using a car, if I'm eating local, growing my food, and I'm judging people that are buying things from the supermarket, I'm falling to a trap of a spiritual ego. Anything that leads us to an outcome of separation, to think, I know more, I received this, or I did more, or I'm more sustainable, or I live more harmoniously. All of these is simply leading us into an outcome of separation. And I think the piece really that we really need to understand is the unity piece, is that we are all teachers to one another. The elders often remark how much they learn from the people in the retreats and in the gatherings. So everything is an exchange. Someone that is sitting there living on the street can be a great teacher for us on so many different things about life. And so I think the main piece is self-reflection, because the journey to get to know oneself, it's a really, really, really long journey. To sit and go within and recognize who we are, what are we here for, what is our essence, what is our medicine. And the most important thing on this path is a daily practice of self-reflection, of deep, deep, deep introspection, of finding every little corner of our beings and seeing which one of them is hurt, is looking for attention, is needing love, is feeling a lack of something. And I think the ultimate, we can only truly be embodied or And even not even think we know something, because, you know, my teacher that just passed away at 100 years old, that was one of the most legendary maracames of the Wirarica culture, was the first one to say, I don't know anything. I'm just a student, you know. He's 100 years old. He's been on maracame commitment since he was 12. His entire life was library of wisdom. He always said, there is enough for everyone. Everyone is equal. I'm just learning. And so one thing we're always going to be is students of this great mystery. But really, I think that for us to learn something very little, the main piece is for us to find this unity, for us to be able to recognize and honor our differences and recognize how much we can learn from every single human being around us. And if we ever want to share anything that came from a tradition, that came from a millenary tradition, we can't invent how to do that, right? We need to go to the source and we need to learn the science of that particular wisdom or culture. We need to put in the time, the lifetime that it is for each of these wisdom traditions, and to understand a little piece, a little speck of them. And so I just really have so much respect for these elders and for the way they teach with so much love, with so much care, and understanding that we all have our own sacred war inside that we need to fight. We saw in Mexico, they call it, there is a symbol that is the Atlatlanoli, that is the union of the fire and the water that represent our sacred sexual energy merging as well within. And they call it the flowered war, the sacred war that we all fight. And I think, you know, our biggest enemy is ourselves, is our own ego and our own personas that try to put us in different places, different sabotaging systems, or to feel more, or to feel less, or to feel this and the other. And really, I think we'll only get it when we are just all the same. This sacred bridge between us and the elders, every participant that joins Aniwa, is equally as sacred, because it's brought so much good to these communities. We're so grateful to every single member of our communities that donated funds, that participated in retreats, that attended the gatherings. My God, the amount of projects that have been accomplished, land that has been secured, modern sustainable technologies that have been implemented to support a better lifestyle in communities. It's beyond, we couldn't have done it. You know, the elders say we couldn't have done it alone.
Thank you for adding that, Vivian. And you mentioned going to the source and the need to go to the source of this wisdom. It seems that we're in a time of some urgency. The climate crisis is undeniable. And concurrently, we have an absolute exploding mental health crisis globally. And so things are moving very fast and things are expanding very quickly. And so we have these indigenous leaders from around the world. There aren't that many of them. And we need their wisdom more than ever. So there's this idea of how do you, with integrity, scale indigenous wisdom? How do you reach the most people? And right now, there's a lot of work in, we call it the psychedelic renaissance, this idea of medicalizing psychedelics as a way of meeting this mental health crisis. And for so many people suffering, that seems to be one way of trying to scale healing and one way of trying to scale transformation. But it does seem to be limited, especially it being such a fraction laden environment. There's so much infighting within the psychedelic community of what's right and who should be in leadership and what companies should happen, what business models should happen. And there's something about going to the source of indigenous wisdom that seems so healing and so safe and something so trustworthy right now. But how do we scale access to this indigenous wisdom? Not only the access in terms of simply being able to hear these lessons, but how do we scale the acculturation to even know that these lessons are the North Star for plant medicine healing? How are we allowing more people to have access in such a short window of time?
I feel, for me, there are many things happening externally with climate, with devastation, deforestation, mining, you know, the list goes on. I can speak here for 2 days. But really, the root of it all, we are in a disconnection crisis. This, everything that is happening in the world is simply a product of our disconnection from our mother that we come from our mother earth, from our disconnection from the sacredness of life. If every person in the world learned this as a child, like these indigenous people did, to see earth as alive, to personify the trees, the beings, to understand. Because our culture is solely based on extraction, right? And now we are finding new ways to extract with less emissions to control the climate. How about we think about living in harmony, to put back, to nourish, and to exchange rather than just extract? No, and so I feel that really the only problem we have in the world is this connection. In the moment we resolve that problem, everything else will be mended, right? So the way, I don't know much about psychedelic therapy. For us, the indigenous say to us that these plants, we don't call them psychedelics, we call them entheogen, because psychedelics produce hallucinations or something from the mind that is a psychedelic trip, for instance, taking LSD. And these sacred plants, which psilocybin is a part of also, they're made by nature that came, were born in this way, grew in nature in this way. They are entheogen, and entheo means God. So entheogen is the one that connects us with God, is the sacred portal, right, that allows us to see the depths of our own essence, to recognize our spirits, and to also tap into the divine, to receive this direct guidance. And these plants really have made so many miracles around the world. And they're not the only way. You know, one time a Lakota chief told us, the road to spirituality is like the teepee. There are many poles, all leading to the same point at top where they intersect. And so the indigenous wisdom, the way we found to scale it, to make it available all over the world, it was through the School of Ancestral Wisdom, through our online platform, which was born during the pandemic. And this wisdom, before, it was completely forbidden to bring a camera or a recording to a sacred ceremony. My God, it was the biggest taboo ever. But during the pandemic, many of the elders received the guidance that this wisdom needs to go far and wide and quick if we're going to have a way out of the situation we are in the world today. You know, some of them are saying we have 20 years to change, meaning starting today, 20 years is our gap in order to create change. Otherwise, we're going to start our human extinction, no? And I believe we can, and I believe we really will. So they received this guidance that they were to start broadcasting this wisdom in this way. So I feel that for us, whatever we have been studying and understanding, this what is a great way to scale this. And that's not to say everyone will feel inclined or connect with this wisdom, but there are many other forms of wisdom that are available also. There are a lot of the amazing Buddhist and Eastern practices, Qigong and Tai Chi also, and Tibetan Buddhism, which is completely shamanic also. And there are many, many different practices that can take us back to the self. I think the piece mainly is for us to, there are many people that are searching today, you know? And so I feel we need to do, we can't just expect a magic pill. Oh, I'll take this, all my problems will be over. There are many portals that can help us through plant medicine. And I understand MDMA therapy and other types of therapies like this have helped many people around the world. So it's not that I'm against them. It's just for me, if I have the options of doing something that is natural and that has a millenary tradition around it, for me is what resonates with me. I will not choose to do something synthetic when I can do something natural. But whatever works for each person to just find that place inside of our hearts, which we all have, to connect to the fire of our soul and to connect to the fire of the divine, I think is all valid.
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective a lot. What Aniwa is doing now with this digital platform is providing a lot of opportunities for people. And as I understand, you're just beginning to launch the Wisdom School as a series of courses that are available. Rudy or Vivian, if you could share a little bit about that to kind of tee up that offering so our listeners know how to connect with the Aniwa online portal and what they can expect to learn from there.
Yeah, so right now we have courses on Thinkific. The courses that we are offering right now, one is a course with Zagas, which Vivian speak about since she's working with them. The Zagas are female mamos. And so this is a course for women. And we also have a course about Hapé, because Hapé is something that has been, again, just proliferated all across the globe. There's people using it. There's people serving it without really much guidance. And what we have been taught with these elders, it doesn't have to be ayahuasca, peyote, like these quote-unquote heavy hitters, but things like hapé, cacao, simple things can be our greatest allies, or they can be very dangerous when used improperly. They can result in energetic entanglements, even with the best intentions. And so we have this woman, Hushahu. She's one of the first females to be given the right to undergo the initiations of, they don't use the word shamanism, they call it pajé, to be a pajé in her culture. And she learned from these two elders, Tata and Yawa, who both lived to be over 100. And they were the last two men who were alive in the Yawanawa culture from before the time of contact. So she is the ancestral memory of that wisdom. She really is the personification of that. And so she has a hapé course that we've done, this Inca leader, he also, Adolfo Tupac, he also has a course that is going to be released. And so it's like this, it's like for people that have this interest, but want to go deeper, whether there's a pandemic or not, just can't get away and travel to go spend a week in these places. This then makes this information, this wisdom available to anyone who feels that call. And what I was concerned about initially was how can the transmission be as powerful as it is when we're sitting in these indigenous villages? And what I found is that it's just as powerful. I mean, every single time, because we did a bunch of stuff just within Aniwa over Zoom, smaller stuff as kind of test runs, and everyone's having life-changing experiences so long as that they stay present and are really receiving and actively questioning and working with the course material, that it really works. And for me, this was a little surprising, but also incredibly inspiring. And it gave me so much hope, because this is a way we can plug in people from all over the world to have these experiences, to experience this transformation, experience this healing, and then to plant that seed, whatever wisdom that they've gleaned, plant that seed in their own lives to potentially affect their coworkers, their family members, their relationships, whoever they're socializing with. Vivian, you want to add?
Yeah, we are so excited to launch this platform, because the offerings we did throughout the pandemic have been really, really extraordinary. And so this is the first time the Zagas, the female mamos, are going to share their wisdom online. They are a very, very secluded people. The Zagas usually the mamos that travel and that teach, but the Zagas, they are priestesses, and they are weavers, they're storytellers, they are masseuses, they are deeply connected to nature. And so they say, for instance, the songs came before the earth was created. There was the sound of the universe. And they say the songs sustain the universe. sustain the balance of the spiritual world. And so they are doing a course about the feminine. And through this course, they're going to be singing sacred songs that are offerings to balance the energies of each participant and also of the earth, and teaching women about the sacredness of their moon time. How can women, what do women have to do with their moon blood? How can they receive wisdom in the sacred time every month? Talking about how to connect with the water, because as women, it is our duty to pray for the water, to pray, to harmonize the water for the future generations so they can have enough water. And so how to make offerings, how to make these pagamentos, how to connect with the womb, which is the most sacred place of a woman, is where we store everything. Our remote, everything that doesn't fit in the heart goes into the womb. So our creative power, our sacred fire, creativity, all emotional things, and also our divine guidance. And so they're going to be teaching women how to cleanse the womb, do a payment for that, pagamento for that. And then we have our Inca leader, Paco Adolfo Tupac. He will talk about the sacred energetic centers that we have. And so how can we cleanse them? And so they talk, they say they are Inca codes. And so the words he says, they're like keys to unlock different things within us. And as he speaks, he's saying these codes, and it's unlocking the healing and the awareness. And so he's going to teach us to use our four sacred energetic centers, how to purify, how to cleanse them, how to purify them, and how to have this energetic tool and protection to always be aware of the energy, of the cosmic energies we are connecting with. He talks about hucha, which is the negative energy. He talks about how do we acquire hucha? How do we connect to energies that hold us back? Many times we are creating it ourselves. Other times we are acquiring it from other people, from places we go to. Sometimes it's in our lineage. How do we spot those? And so this is going to be a 3-day intensive course to learn to work with our energy centers and to learn to be aware of the energies that we are vibrating in, to purify our own and to understand ourselves better through that self-reflection also that I spoke about.
Wow, it sounds like I could use that course. I mean, don't we all have these places that are that feel locked inside ourselves and we need keys for? So in terms of following Anuwa and connecting with the platform, if you could tell me just a little bit about how the listeners can connect with Anuwa and also connect with the BOA Foundation. And I know, Rudy, you wanted to speak a little bit about the bill in Brazil as well. So just if we could just close our conversation today with how the listeners can connect with Anuwa, could support the work that you're doing, and can get involved in these incredible offerings that you're presenting.
Vivian, you want to tell them how they can connect, and then I'll finish with BOA Foundation?
Yeah, so you can connect by going to our website, www.aniwa.co. And there are many offerings online. We are adding them slowly every week and some live courses coming up. And since this all began during the pandemic, and it's such a special opportunity to have access to this wisdom. So far, they've been recorded over Zoom. But this year, we are going to the communities to shoot beautiful, high quality, high definition images also. And so please join our mailing list and get in touch. We would love to expand our community. And then if you want to support any of the elders projects, we have our sister organization also, the BOA Foundation.
Yes, and I will add that we do have an active Instagram for both of these organizations. And the website for the BOA Foundation is www.theboafoundation.org. And one particular urgent matter that the BOA Foundation in partnership with Aniwa is tending to is this bill that the Brazilian government passed through their first phase, which is PL 490. And our work started in Brazil in Acre, the state of Acre. And we have several tribes that we support in this state alone and others throughout Brazil. What this bill means to do is to open up land that was given back to the indigenous as reservation land, for lack of a better term, where they could live in peace in their traditional ways and their cultures. And it's already a small part. Really, the fight is to expand this reservation land because there's some tribes that don't have it still. And we're trying to expand it. And here comes this bill that wants to actually open up this reservation land to what is being termed as development. And we do not look at this as development, nor do our indigenous relatives. In fact, we look at it as a desecration, pollution, really a catastrophe. The Amazon rainforest, as it is now, is having trouble taking in all of the carbon dioxide that we are emitting. So we have the projects with Benki and others planting trees to offset this. And here we have the Brazilian government stepping in and wanting to cut down more trees so that Chinese, American, European, Australian corporations can come in and mine and drill for oil and just extract, as Vivian talked about earlier, further means of extraction. This would mean ecocide. A lot of the leaders that we work with in Brazil, this is like the 1%. They've gone out and made alliances and brought resources back into their villages, and they're really starting to thrive. But this isn't the majority. There are so many villages that still don't have clean water, that don't have enough housing, that don't have enough food, that don't have simple things like solar power or eco-toilets that really enrich their standard of living, the quality of life. And if this bill passes and this happens, these people are at risk of truly disappearing from Earth. And as we feel at Aniwa, it's these indigenous elders who are guiding us, who are, you know, the pillars in maintaining the balance so that we have hope that we can restore balance on Earth. And if this bill passes, we might lose the very people that are guiding the restoration of this balance. And so the Brazilian government seems keen on doing this and in talks with many people, indigenous leaders, as well as people that are involved on the ground in Brazil. It's going to require international intervention or international pressure. And so we are working with the High Commission of Human Rights and Land Rights at the United Nations to form a petition, which we really want signed by as many people. Can we get 200,000? Can we get 500,000? Can we get 1 million, 2 million? Who are all joining and saying, no, the Amazon rainforest is a treasure of humanity. It's a treasure of Earth. And it is now our responsibility to step in and say enough is enough, to use our voices. Obviously, we also have some campaigns which will be supporting these indigenous leaders who are really leading the charge in fighting and protesting to raise money. But it's going to take enough voices joining together, saying no for this bill to be stopped and extinguished. So I wanted to share that. You can stay tuned on the Boa Foundation Instagram and our website. We will be coming forth with this petition soon. And like that, just end by saying what our great teacher Benki always says. You guys want to help? Plant trees, plant something. Money helps, but you can do this in your own homes, in your own yards, in your own parks. Plant something, whether it's a garden or trees or whatever. This is how every single person can be activated in a tremendously powerful manner. So thank you, Eamon. Really appreciate the space you've given us for us to share, and really appreciate the forum and the container that you've set for topics like this to be discussed. Thank you again for the time, and lots of blessings. Look forward to meeting you in person one day.
Oh, thank you, Rudy. And thank you so much for that call to action at the end. It's so helpful to have the invitation to something that you can do that's a direct action. So thank you for that. And thank you so much, Vivian. Thank you for your wisdom as well on this show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us, Iman, for giving us this platform to talk about our work. Thank you so much to your community as well for welcoming us, for listening. And we look forward to many more gatherings together.
I do as well. Thank you so much. Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you like the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor.